Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Sticking with baseball, Levi Weaver is the author of The Windup for The Athletic, their daily MLB newsletter. He joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Levi, we have plenty to talk about when it comes to a look around baseball. I'm going to start, though, with pitcher injuries. Obviously, a controversial topic to start the season. Tony Clark, representative for MLBPA, said, it's a pitch clock issue. Meanwhile, you've had some other folks, primarily MLB, saying absolutely not. That's not what it is. You spoke with players. You've done your research. What do you think is maybe behind some of the awful arm injuries we're seeing?
Yeah, it's complicated, right? I don't think it's one thing in particular. I think it's probably a confluence of a lot of different things. I thought there was a TV reporter from Houston that interviewed Justin Verlander recently, and it was a couple days ago or yesterday maybe. And Verlander gave a very long but very insightful answer. And one of the things that he mentioned was, baseball changed the ball back in, I think it was 2015. And there were more home runs. You can go back and look at the numbers. And home run totals just skyrocketed that year. And at the time, MLB was like, what? Us? No. We didn't change. It's all within the scope of what's normal. And they later kind of quietly went back and were like, yeah, there were maybe some little changes. But at that point in time, like contact that used to be sort of a fly out to the outfield or bad contact or opposite field contact was now going for a home run. And Verlander said pitchers at that point had to change their mindset where like you can't pitch to bad contact anymore. You have to try to get it swing and miss. And we saw the strikeout numbers increase. We see, things like training, all of these programs to help pitchers increase their velocity, increase their spin, make the pitches harder to hit. And Verlander attributed that change in mindset to his Tommy John surgery that he had a few years ago. He said, he used to sit up there and throw 93, 94 in the first couple of innings. And then if I needed to reach back in the tank near the end, I had it. But really, I was trying to get deep into the game. And then it switched. And pitchers are going out there going max effort. Shohei Ohtani said a similar thing. He said, if I've got this better pitch available to me, why am I not going to throw that pitch? He is currently recovering from Tommy John surgery. So I think that is part of it. I think part of it is also, it's too early to know, really, I think, if the pitch clock is a problem, because pitcher injuries were increasing leading up to the pitch clock. So is that a part of it? Yeah, maybe. It could be. I think Garrett Cole was right when he said it was sort of irresponsible for MLB to dismiss it outright and be like, it couldn't possibly be that. Yeah, take it all into account. Let's figure it out, because I think there are a lot of different factors, and it's becoming, and I say becoming, it has been and continues to be a big issue for the sport. A lot of the best pitchers in the league are currently recovering from injury right now, and the game is better with those players in it.
Levi, you talk about the change in the approach when it comes to the pitchers. How's this change when it comes to the guys in the batter's box? How has their approach changed, or has it changed at all? Walk me through it.
Well, I think it changed. We saw this happen, a little under a decade ago, where launch angle was the key word, right? Where guys are like, get under the ball, get lift, a home. It's fine to strike out a little bit more if you're hitting more home runs to account for that. There is better value overall. I think we've seen that start to shift a little bit now because they banned the shift, and so now base hits are more prevalent. You're getting, a grounder to the right side from a left-handed hitter that was, we saw somebody like Corey Seager, where 2 years ago he was smashing the ball really hard on the left-hand side and he was getting out because there's, two or three players over there to catch the ball. Then last year he had a huge season. He was great because this shift prevented teams from doing that. So I think baseball is a slow-moving behemoth of a ship with kind of a small rudder, and we saw them turn that rudder a little bit, ban the shift, and now we're starting to see guys value contact and getting on base a little bit more. But these things they're such slow cycles. Even the launch angle thing that started, 2010, 11, 12, really took off in, especially when the ball changed and those balls were going for home runs. And now we're just now seeing it start to taper off. So, it's always been a cat and mouse game from the smallest, you know, in and at bat where a pitcher's trying to fool a hitter and a hitter's trying to guess what a pitcher's throwing, up to, you know, these grand scale things that we're seeing, like max effort all the time and like launch angle and valuing singles.
We're talking with Levi Weaver of The Athletic right now, and we are going to get to the Mariners, but we're going to continue our look around the rest of baseball first. Levi, I'm going to move out to Oakland, where the A's are soon moving out of it towards Sacramento. September 26th will be the final game for the A's at OCO. What did you make of this news, of Jeff Fisher's press conference, of the decision to play in a minor league park before Vegas? What did you think of all this?
Man, this is a topic where I really have to maintain professionality, because it's easy for me to just get on a soapbox.
I think you should get on a soapbox. I mean, you're on sports radio. I think this is the moment where you just kind of like you lean back and you go, okay, here's the deal, guys. Don't worry, Levi. No one's listening.
I'm gonna start yelling like Mad Dog here in just a minute. no, I think when I was a kid, so I grew up in Texas, and, you know, I was a Rangers fan as a kid, and of course, Oakland is a division rival, and so you're like, boo, Oakland, they suck, they have poop in their dugout. when I started to cover baseball and, you know, trying to be a little bit more objective, and I got a chance to begin traveling, and I went to the Coliseum, and I discovered what I'd been missing. The fans there are amazing, and people talk about, oh, they just have no fans. No, they just have very smart fans. And when the team was good and when they were competing, that place was full and it was rocking. And the culture around A's fandom is unlike any other in the sport. I've seen luchador wrestling in the parking lot. They've got these food trucks in the pavilion behind the stadium that are amazing. They love baseball and they love their team, and they are absolutely fanatics about it, and they're amazing. And then when ownership plays cheap and, you know, trades off all the good players and doesn't try to win, fans are like, screw that. We're not coming. We're, you know, give us a good team. We want to come cheer this team on, but we're not going to do it if you continue to screw us over. Ticket prices go up as the team is losing, you know, 100 games a year. No, we're not going to pay for that. Like, give us something to root for and we'll be right back there. And then John Fisher takes that and goes, well, we don't have any fans. Nobody's coming. So guess we got to move. Oakland fans are the metaphor that I used in the newsletter this week was that A's fans are basically like a Picasso. You know, they are priceless. They're abstract. They're weird. They make us uncomfortable, and they're so valuable. And John Fisher wanted a bright and shiny NFT that he could flip for a profit. And he's moving the team to Vegas. What he has done to that team, the way that he has justified moving, he's really not, like, you hear about the efforts that they've made to stay in Oakland, but they're asking for so much taxpayer money in a city that needs those tax dollars to address very real issues. John Fisher is a multi-billionaire. He has the money to do this, to keep the team where it belongs, for the good of the sport and for the good of society. The team should be in Oakland. That is where it belongs, and they deserve a good team to cheer for. They are a unique and beautiful fan base, and they're having this team ripped out from underneath them for the sake of profit, for the sake of this bright, shiny new stadium in Las Vegas. It's a travesty. It is one of the worst things that has happened to the sport, in my opinion, and I think it's unforgivable what John Fisher has done. And, yeah, to go play in a minor league park, okay, whatever. You know, like, they couldn't come up with a plan to stay in Oakland. They couldn't find a way to work it out with the city of Oakland to stay there until the stadium in Vegas is ready. And frankly, I don't blame Oakland for not bending over backwards for John Fisher. Look, you're leaving anyway, man. Like, if you're leaving and you want to screw us over, go play in a minor league park. Like, we don't need you here. If you really want to leave, go leave. So, man, John Fisher sucks, and I am very much in
the, yeah,
like, sell the team boat. I think that baseball would be better without John Fisher, and it would definitely be better with the A's in Oakland with an owner that gives a crap about the fans and wants to put a team on the field that is worth cheering for.
Preach. Loving it, Levi. All right, now I want to ask you about, I guess, the biggest scandal in baseball right now, if you want to call it a scandal, just the Shohei Ohtani deal. You have some write-ups on it on the wind-up. Where are we at with this whole deal? I mean, Shohei is still going out and being an incredible baseball player. Seems not to bother him too much. Where do you stand on this whole situation, and what do you think the result is going to be? Because honestly, I think the MLB would do anything they can to make sure Ohtani is the face of this league and continues to play some good baseball. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Okay. So whereas I was very opinionated about the A's, this one is almost the opposite because I just don't know. You know, there are so many questions that are unanswered. Why was Stipe's original, you know, originally there was Ohtani's team hired a crisis management guy. And basically the original story was that he was helping out a friend. And then that story changed. And that's from the Ohtani camp. The story changed. So I don't know why that changed. I don't know what happened there. The one thing I will say that I think has been kind of misunderstood, I've heard a lot of people ask, like, how does somebody get $4.5 million from Ohtani without him noticing? So before I was in baseball, I was in the music industry. I've heard of so many bands whose managers screwed them over. Not that I sort of ran in these circles, but have friends that run in these circles where celebrities would hire a personal assistant. And basically it's like, I don't want to deal with making sure the electric bill gets paid. I don't want to deal with making sure that, you know, my life insurance is paid and all of you know, the little piddly things that we have to do with our bank account every month. If you make enough money, you can hire someone to take care of that for you. And what that means is they do have access to your bank account. And so that to me is not a surprise that they had access to the bank account. And that part of the story, it does not raise any red flags with me. For me, the red flag is, why did the story change? And frankly, we just don't know. I mean, baseball is, there's an investigation going into the situation. I guess the IRS is investigating Ipe. The FBI is investigating this bookie. We'll have more information eventually, but until we do, I mean, my official stance on it is I just don't know.
Yeah, I concur on that one. Also, there's part of me that goes like, I mean, if it's the most boring version of it, I don't know that I fully care. Like, it's obviously, like, I feel bad for Ohtani in that case, but sure. If he's not involved in the gambling himself, you're kind of like, wait, so he just got taken advantage of? It's a fascinating story. We'll see it continue to unfold. I'm going to spend the last couple of minutes here looking at the AL West and looking at the Mariners. As you know, the Mariners starting rotation, one of the best in baseball, hasn't been looking like it. Meanwhile, the lineup has been kind of falling short. I know that you have to keep your eye on all of baseball, and obviously you know the AL West. I don't know how closely you're actually tracking the Mariners. They have not given you many reasons to watch closely, but yeah. What do you make of this team's outlook in general for the season? What did you think of them heading into the year?
I really was curious if the lineup was going to be enough to keep up with their starting pitching. I assumed that with all of those starters, they were going to be a good team. What's the old axiom that offense gets you into the playoffs and pitching wins a World Series? I thought if they made it into the playoffs, they were going to be very dangerous. Let me give you this caveat. It's still very early, right? It's early April. It's not even double digits into April yet. So this can all very much change. But right now, when you look at, you know, I'm on the FanGraphs leaderboard page here for wins above replacement by starting pitchers. If you'd ask me the day before opening day, where will Seattle be? I'd be like, it's third or fourth, you know, probably somewhere in there. They've got a very good rotation. They're 15th right now, so that's not great. Their ERA by their starting pitchers is also, it's good grief, 576, which is 28th out of 30 teams. So very, very disappointing on that standpoint. But I still think they've got a good team. I still think that the starting rotation is not this bad. I mean, a week ago, look, we were talking about, to take it back to Ohtani for a minute, he was hitting, I think, 246. He just looked like just another guy. And then in the last week, he's 11 for 22, and he looks like Shohei Ohtani again. These things tend to go in streaks, and they all even out. I do think the Mariners' rotation is very, very good, and I don't think they'll be this bad for the entire season. Fortunately for them, like, the Astros have been, what are they at, like 4-7 so far this year? The Rangers look pretty good, I guess, but we'll see how. I think their rotation has actually been better than probably it really is. The Angels are not going to keep winning games like this. I feel safe saying that. So, and the A's, we already know, are barely a major league team. So there's a path for the playoffs for Seattle. It's still there. They do need their rotation to pick it up, but I think they will. I really just don't think they're this bad.
He is The Athletic's Levi Weaver, author of The Wind Up for The Athletic, which is their daily MLB newsletter. Make sure you subscribe for the latest there. Thanks so much, Levi. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Levi.
Anytime. Take care, guys.
All right, let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, the Hawks are picking at number 16 this year. So how can that number 16 pick feel like a top 10 pick?
Man, I haven't heard anybody really talk about this, man. So when I was driving down the 405, yes, I said the 405. I'm from California. That's what we say it. All right. I started thinking, I go, yeah, they have the number 16 pick. But according to what they need, they have a higher pick. And that is really like a top 10 pick for them. Because you know at least four quarterbacks are going to be gone by the time it gets to them. Might even be five quarterbacks. So I'm looking at this and I go, all right, maybe call it number 10 pick. Mm-hmm. Call it maybe the number 11 pick. It holds a bit more value to them. So I think when it comes to negotiating with other teams, if they want that number 16 pick, they got to be like, look, we don't need a quarterback in this situation. We don't know what you want to, well, maybe they will know what they want because they're going to talk about it. But look, this number 16 pick means more to us than it does to you because we have a chance to essentially have another top 10 pick. So that's the way I'm looking at this. So I'm looking at, obviously, the Bears, the Commanders, New England, maybe Arizona, and we'll see who moves up to grab that spot. The Chargers, someone might move up to grab that spot. And all those guys are going to grab quarterbacks. So now you're looking at your offensive lineman, you're looking at your defensive lineman, and you're saying, we have a legit chance to get these guys. That number 16 is worth more than just a number 16 to the Seahawks. I'm going to say this is around 9, 10, 11 to them because of the quarterbacks that are going to go. They're not looking for a quarterback. If they do, they're going to get them late in the draft, and I doubt they even do that. So because everyone else is quarterback needy and hungry, and the Hawks are not, 16 is really like a 10 pick.
Second down. The four falls to Buffalo. We all know the Bills' playoff woes of the 90s. Who may start reminding you of the Bills if they don't win soon?
They better get this right.
I'm so curious about this answer.
They got to get it right. It's the San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, that was my guess.
They got to get it right, man. In 2023, you lose in the Super Bowl. In 22, you lost in the conference championship. 21, conference championship. In 2020, no playoffs. In 2019, you lose in the Super Bowl. There have been five years where you've been competitive, minus 2020, and guys are getting old. Next year, you got Ward, who's going to be a free agent. Greenlaw, Brandon Ayuk is going through his contract negotiations. Hufanga is going to be a free agent. And then you have Feliciano on the offensive line, who's going to be a free agent. In 26, you got Kittle, Debo, and McCaffrey. I'm just saying, these windows are only open for so long. They've had a window of 5 years to where they've been extremely competitive and have not been able to get it done. Look at Kyle Shanahan. Everyone sees him as one of the best offensive minds in the game, and he probably is. But at some point, you got to look at the coaching staff, the roster, and say, all right, we got to start all over, especially when Brock Purdy gets his money, because then he's going to take up 15% to 20% of the salary cap. The Niners, man, you guys should be desperate right now. You need to get a win, a Super Bowl championship, either this year or next year, or things are going to change. I was going to throw Baltimore into the mix, but you see what they've done with that roster. They mixed some things up but brought some guys over as well. They're retooling. I don't think John Lynch is going to sit still and say, okay, let's ride this out for a couple years and see what happens. He's always going to try to make his team better. But this has been the most successful team in the league to not win a Super Bowl so far in the past 5 years. They better get it done this year or it's going to be tough for them.
It is wild. Every single season you enter the season, and not just by DVOA, though I think this past season it was the Ravens, but it's, oh my God, the 49ers, best team. 49ers, bet on them. 49ers, they're going to get it done. Like, if you were to have me guess which team from the NFC once again goes to the Super Bowl this year, I would guess the 49ers. I am not betting on them winning, especially if they're facing Patrick Mahomes once again. Chiefs trying to three-peat here. Third down. What receiver can have a breakout season?
All right, so now, initially when the receivers on this team were leaving, I'm like, it's going to be tough over there for this guy. But I think that the Chargers allow Keenan Allen to leave and they allow Mike Williams to leave or didn't really throw money at them the way they would have liked because they believe in Quentin Johnston. Last year didn't have a bad year, not a great year, 600 yards, a few touchdowns. But the more I watch film on this young man, I go, look, he gets his targets. This guy's going to be a problem. The Chargers are in a great position right now. They got the number 5 pick. What are they going to do with it? Are they going to draft a receiver to team up with them? Are they going to move back and kind of bolster this offensive line or get Justin Herbert some weapons? Who knows? But I look at Quentin Johnston and I go, this is his year to really step up and be a number one receiver. Coming out of TCU, already thought he was number one receiver type caliber. But you go over there with the OG Keenan Allen, you got Mike Williams, you gotta sit in the back seat for a little bit. So because I think Quentin Johnston could be a number one receiver, That's why they let Keenan Allen and Mike Williams go. Obviously, some other factors into it, too. You got to want to come back to the Chargers and be on that team. But, no, look for Quentin Johnston, man. He needs to have a big year for these guys, and I think he's going to have it.
Fourth down. Well, I hope it's not the transparent pants we're seeing in baseball. There have been some changes in NFL equipment. What change are you applauding?
Those pants are ridiculous, though.
Truly, and I thought that they would be fixed. I mean, yeah. We had that report of the Seattle Mariners being among teams that didn't have every single uniform combo in, which is why you didn't see those cream-colored Sunday uniforms in the first weekend. Just stupid.
How you not got all... I run a program, Elite Training Academy. Holla at me. 707 teams. I got 9 of them. All of our jerseys are on time every single year. This is MLB. Get this man his jersey, but let's go to football. This is a 4-down, not a 3 bases or home run territory, whatever you want to call it. The equipment. They're getting rid of the Larry Fitzgerald helmet. And I'm so excited.
Dang.
The Revo. The Revolution. Now, look, Larry Fitz, you know what? It was the safest helmet out there for a little bit. But that thing looked silly. And I remember I tried it on for one practice at Washington State. It was comfortable. It was light. I was moving. I felt stupid wearing that dang helmet, man, with that face mask. It looked all weird. Jerry Rice wore it later in his career. I just really hate that helmet. So for style purposes, they got rid of the Peyton Manning. They got rid of the Larry Fitzgerald, the old school Jerry Rice. That helmet is done. I never want to see a high school kid, a college kid, or a professional wear that thing again. Put it up in the Hall of Fame and then the museum somewhere, because that was the ugliest helmet I ever seen in my life. It was comfortable, though.
What is the single ugliest thing that you can see? So Levi Weaver, who we just had on, lamented that the unis that this might have been, was it from Sunday or Monday? The unis the Rangers were wearing in a series against the Astros just made for an incredibly aesthetically unpleasing combo.
The baby blues against the orange with the white pants
for the Astros. He was like, nothing wrong independently with these uniforms, but I hate this combination against these two. What are either two teams that play each other that you hate that combination, or just something else like that helmet where you're like, this is ugly, and the fact that no one else recognizes that this does not belong in sports?
I hate it when skill positions like receivers, DBs, wear 3-quarter cleats, like the ones that go up on your ankle. It just looks like you should have your hand in the dirt if you're wearing some high top cleats out there. Can't stand it when I see that.
Curtis, would we be able to take calls today if needed?
Sure.
Here's my question.
What do you got in mind?
Okay, so as we've continued to have the conversations we've had about pitcher injuries and then later talking about football and talking about all these other things, we still have the Mac and Jack's text line sounding off about the start to the Mariners season, whether or not it's too early. Like, is it too early to complain? How are you feeling about the Mariners? And so I can't tell if coming up at noon we should open up phone lines, because here's the deal, you guys. I am not opening up phone lines. Michael Bumpus is not opening up phone lines if everyone's only going to complain at home. If you want to complain, if you want to say something, if you want to have your take, if you want to get that in, if you want to call in and tell everyone to calm down because this team is going to be great, or if you want to call in and complain, then you better do it. So here's what I'm going to do. If that's where you want to steer the show, Bump and I are going to let you guys decide. 866-979-3776. Let us know on the Mac and Jack's text line. I'm kind of feeling another Mariners conversation.
It
feels like people are getting pretty passionate about this. That's not what we're doing next, though. What we're doing instead, following a rehab start on Sunday, Justin Verlander shared plenty on why we're seeing so many pitchers deal with elbow injuries to start the season. He shared his thoughts. Plus, Danny Hurley has a very strange superstition on game days. Don't go anywhere.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Coming up at noon, we're opening up phone lines for your calls. Write down the number, 866-979-3776. Are you team too early when it comes to the Mariners or not? Now, I do want to preface it that both Bump and I know that it's early, okay? We are baseball fans. Bump grew up a Dodgers fan. He knows this game. You played when you were younger. Like, we know that it is April 9th. We are not even as...
I didn't blow my knee out.
Exactly. Totally. As Levi Weaver said when he joined us, we are not even into double digits in April. We are on April 9th. Happy birthday, Curtis. But it has also been kind of a disappointing start to the season so far, and I am seeing a lot of passionate fans texting into the Mac and Jack's text line, so let's take your texts and turn them into calls. Give you guys the mic. That is coming up at noon, 866-979-3776. It's basically just your message. Are you team, hey, it's too early, everyone calm down, everyone chill, I'm still excited? Or are you team, I need to rant and I need to do it now? You're going to let us know coming up in 30. Right now, though, we are looking at the timeline. We're getting started with our first story here, talking about pitcher injuries. Following a rehab start on Sunday, Astros ace Justin Verlander shared plenty on why we're seeing so many pitchers deal with elbow injuries to start the season. Here's some of what he said.
I think the game has changed a lot. You know, I think it'd be easiest to hear and blame the pitch clock. You know, I think in reality, you put everything together and everything has a little bit of influence. You know, I think the biggest thing, the style of pitching has changed so much. You know, everybody's throwing as hard as they possibly can and spinning the ball as hard as they possibly can. And, you know, it's hard to deny those results, obviously. It's a double-edged sword. How can you tell somebody to go out there and not do that when they're capable of throwing 100? And you know, this young guy comes up and throws a pitch 95 and gives up a big homer, and everybody's like, what the hell, man? So something needs to change.
What do you hear from Justin here, Bump?
I hear evolution of baseball. The one game that doesn't change very much is changing right now as far as the approach of the pitchers. And what you're doing is you're putting yourself at risk a bit more because you're throwing these pitches that move 6 to 7, 8 inches and you put a lot of stress on your body as your primary pitch. Back in the day, you used to throw that fastball to set everything up and then try to catch them slipping with off speed. They're saying, if the slider is my best pitch, I'm going to throw that slider and then use the fastball or other pitches as my secondary pick. And you can combine that. He says, look, you can't ignore really the pitch clock, but he doesn't think that it has too much to do with it. Me personally, I think that when you throw more pitches in a short amount of time, you put more fatigue on your body, it makes sense. And then you add just the strength and the stuff that these pitchers have, and they're snapping. And it makes sense, man. The body ain't supposed to move like that. Throwing a baseball is super unnatural. So he says, look, it's a combination of a lot of things, but the most important thing is that guys are throwing more stuff.
Justin Verlander thinks that things started to really change in 2016 when the league changed the baseball.
When the balls started to change back in 2016 and they started flying out a bit more frequently, I know myself personally that started changing how I had to approach pitching. You have to start swinging, you have to start approaching the batter as I want swing and miss. I can't have him put the ball in play, where the old adage, pitch down, pitch away from the guy, hit your spot, get weak contact early in the count, and then you can kind of go up, and that kind of went out the window when everybody started being able to leave the yard, especially opposite field. You know, and look, I've said my piece on that before in the past, and it is what it is. As long as we're all out here competing on an even playing field, that's what I care about, and we all have the same baseball in our hands, so that's that. But I do think that you throw that in the mix, and you throw analytics in the mix, and you throw the pitch clock in the mix, and it all kind of, you know, all kind of adds up.
If you guys remember, 2016 was a year where there was just an offensive explosion in MLB, particularly with home runs. By the All-Star break that year, MLB was on pace for over 5,500 home runs, which was 675 more than the year prior, a 13.8% increase. It was the only season with a higher rate of home runs hit compared to 2000, which was obviously the heart of the steroid era. So in 2016, you saw more home runs than ever before prior to when guys were juicing. And pitchers had to change their approach. I can see this bump as being the start of guys just realizing they needed to throw harder, they needed to add more spin, and they needed to add more torque to their body motion, to their arm, to their throwing motion than ever before.
Yeah, guys are making better contact. He says, like, they're pushing it opposite in ways that they didn't used to do it before. So what does that tell me? That hitters are getting better. And you look at a guy that's like Shohei Ohtani. He was, what, 6'3", 6'4", 215, 20 pounds. I mean, you're getting a different type of athlete as well. When you're getting the Aaron Judges as well, these big boys out there, they're able to push the ball or make contact with the ball in ways that they haven't been able to in the past. So what do? You adjust that. He said it plain and simple. It goes, you used to throw pitches and hope for weak contact. Now that weak contact is turning in to base hits and home runs. So there's a change going on in this whole approach. And then you add in the changing of the baseball, the pitch clock. I mean, there are so many factors that go into this. It's interesting, but I think this could be good for the game too, man. It's not good for these pitchers because we're seeing these injuries go up, but it's changing an approach to a game that's been the way for so long. And I like change. I'm up for it because baseball didn't change very much, very often. And that's me as a fan, as an analyst. Now, as a player, as a pitcher, I probably hate it because I'm putting myself at risk. I got to throw harder. I need more stuff out there.
All right, next story here in the timeline. New Arkansas head coach, former Kentucky head coach John Calipari, refused to answer a question from a Lexington TV reporter about him leaving Kentucky for the Arkansas job. Take a listen.
Hey, Coach, you got anything you want to say to your fans or anything?
I'm watching my dog right now.
Anything right now you want to say anything to your fans right now?
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm good. Come on, Paul. Come on. My dog is walking me. Come on.
From reporter Matt Norlander, he said that Calipari still, as of this moment, this was at 10:35 this morning, has not had any contact with Kentucky AD Mitch Barnhart. It seems like he's waiting on approval on his Arkansas contract, which could come any moment now, before finalizing the divorce with Kentucky. The expectation is it will happen later today.
I mean, maybe you just ain't ready, especially in that situation. He's walking down the street. My man wears khakis every day. Also, he has khakis on in that deal.
Every coach, I can guarantee you, has like minimum three. How many khakis do you own?
I got like three.
That's what I'm saying. Everyone who has ever coached any sport at any level has
khakis.
Minimum one pair of khakis.
Yeah, you can wear anything with khakis.
Have you been in a war room? You have khaki shorts.
Khaki shorts. That's summer golf for me. I'm not surprised. I think this was sudden. I think when he does address the media, he's got to be careful with what he says because you are leaving the University of Kentucky. I think it was mutual. I think Kentucky didn't want to give him $33 million to fire him, but I also think that Calipari did them a favor and went out and sought a job elsewhere so they wouldn't have to do that. It's just a weird place, man. So, and you're walking your dog. Sometimes you just want to chill. Looks like he was walking his dog and looking at his phone. My man was in his own zone.
Know,
he ain't trying to answer no questions right now.
It's when you watch TV, but then you're shopping on your phone on Amazon, too. You're like, let me vibe. Like, let me just chill here. Leave me alone. Next up, brother of Danny Hurley, ASU head basketball coach Bobby Hurley, shared on last night's national championship game pregame show an interesting superstition he has on game days.
We all have routines, and we talk about our crazy routines that we have. I don't eat on game day. That's mine. I want to make myself suffer and sacrifice before I have to go out and perform.
Are you serious?
Yes. No food on game day.
Oh, my God.
I fast.
Yeah.
Wow. That's my way of sacrificing.
I eat fast.
I like Charles' response. I eat fast. Fasting on game day because I want to suffer is an interesting approach when you are not a swimmer.
I pass out. I would pass out if I didn't. Even as a coach, player, I would pass out. I always admired, man, my Muslim homies when, you know, they were fasting.
Uh-huh.
And I remember we played Auburn, and it was like 90% humidity. And they're fasting, getting IVs, and yet still going out and balling. Salute to anybody who goes out and plays on an empty stomach.
All right, you guys, we are going to do two things here. Coming up next, we're going to have our latest preview for drafting Seahawks, which is not necessarily who you're taking at number 16 overall for the Seahawks, but who in this draft looks, feels, acts like a Seahawk. So we're going to be identifying another guy, this one for the offensive line, coming up next. After we get to that, we are opening up phone lines. Bump and I have seen so many people debate on the Mac and Jack's text line, either one. It's not too early. Here's why I'm concerned about the Mariners. I'm done saying it's too early. I'm fired up. Or, on the other side, people saying, everyone needs to stop panicking. It's April 9th. Are you insane? Which one are you? 866-979-3776. That is the question that you're answering. Identify yourself. Coming up at noon. It's all coming your way next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Coming up in less than 15 minutes, are you team, it's too early, calm down, or are you team, it's not too early, here's what I don't love seeing when it comes to the Mariners. That number to call in 15 is going to be 866-979-3776. write that down. I'll give that to you again a little bit later. Right now, though, we're sticking with the Seahawks. There are two features that Bump and I are running heading up to the draft. One is just who the Seahawks could take at pick number 16, and Bump has done an excellent job with all of those previews. We will get back to that with tomorrow's show. Before we get to it, though, we're rotating in a segment called Drafting Seahawks. Now, these are a little bit different. It's not who they're taking at 16, but where in this draft are the guys that look, that feel, that sound, that act, that just seem like Seahawks players? We got a new one today, so let's get to it. Pick number, wherever, is offensive lineman Jackson Powers Johnson out of Oregon. This is the center that Seattle could be looking for. Now, 16 would be a little high for Powers Johnson, though he could go in the first round and has been mocked in the first round to the Steelers, at times to the Cowboys in the late 20s. So he may not be available in the second should Seattle draft there, though for the purposes of this mock, that's where I have Seattle taking him. So let's get to it. He is a big guy, 6'3", 320. He became the starting center for the Ducks in 2023 and did one hell of a job in that role. He became the first Pac-12 player, first Oregon Duck ever to win the Remington Trophy as the nation's best center. He was also an all-Pac-12 first team from the coaches. Just an absolutely amazing offensive lineman, Outland Trophy semifinalist, Lombardi Trophy midseason watch list. He did an amazing job with Oregon's offense out there protecting Bo Nix. And Bump, frankly, this is a guy who we badly need to see on a team like Seattle. Before I throw to you with what you've seen on tape, let's take a listen to what someone else has. Joey Harrington, also an Oregon grad himself, former Oregon player himself, said this about Powers Johnson.
No matter where he goes, he's going to be a valuable piece to whatever offensive line he goes. He's that solid of a player. He reminds me, actually, again, another former Seahawk is Max Unger. Just a guy who can absolutely anchor an offensive line. He's smart, he's strong, he's athletic, and he loves playing the game.
Yeah, Max Unger, another former Oregon grad. But do you know how many times Seahawks fans have said, oh, why'd we ever give away Max Unger? I mean, that is one of the most popular names that fans lament not staying with the Seahawks, obviously part of that Jimmy Graham trade. And this has been a position that's been unsettled since then. Bump, when you see Powers Johnson on film, what do you see?
First, his name is perfect for football. Jackson,
right?
Powers Johnson.
Come on now.
That sounds like an offensive lineman. 6'3", 320, like you pointed out. The first thing I see with Jackson Powers Johnson is that first step. You are a center. You got a guard and tackles. They take their first steps. They're initiating contact when we're talking about the run game or they're dropping back into pass pro. You have to get the snap off first. And he played in a primarily shotgun offense over there with the Oregon Ducks, and there was no panic. You know how many times I've seen centers snap the ball over a quarterback's head, put it in the dirt, left or right, because you got a zero or one take right in front of you, and you're so concerned about getting your head up and bow, making that contact. He's done a great job of just holding his water, is what football coaches like to say. Hold your water. Does a good job of holding his water. When he engages with you, he typically wins that battle. I haven't seen too many times where he gets thrown off of his spot. Of course, it happens. This is football. Guys win some, they lose some. He's great with the combo blocks. Say there is a one tech to the left of him, and they're running a zone right. He's got to help that left guard with that one tech. Boom, he gets that post hand on the left side to that one tech, and then he's climbing up to the second level, or he's down blocking. If it's a stretch zone, he's trying to help the other guard with that three tech. He does a great job of keeping his balance in a small space. You got to snap, you got to step left, step right, and you climb. He's very composed when he does that. Another thing I look at when I look at guys, especially offensive linemen, do you walk with that offensive line swag and attitude? Yeah. Like, I'm here to beat you up. And he does exactly that. There's something about him. I watched him during the combine. You know, they have these promos, and usually the promos go to the linebackers, the receivers, mm-hmm. the quarterbacks. Man, mm-hmm. they got my guy Jackson Powers Johnson with the football, with the swag. I go, okay, O-line, I like that about you. He plays with a confidence, and you see that when he's out there. During the Senior Bowl, he also took reps at the guard spot as well. At 6'3", 320, you can play that guard spot. Obviously, he got over, 700 snaps at the center spot. You want to keep him there, but if you have to, you can move him around. A very versatile player. The only knock I would say sometimes is that he gets a little upright, and again, that's where you lose your battles. And at 6'3", 320, your biggest asset is that you are shorter than most of the offensive line that you're going to be working with. So everything you want out of a center. Understands the box. Great when it comes to combination. Holds his water when he has pressure up the A-gaps or that zero tech sitting right there. Plays with attitude, good hands, and is quick. That center, you got to be able to take that first step, make your moves. You're not going to pull as much as a guard does, but sometimes when you run trap schemes or anything like that, you're going to be able to do that. But, yes, this is a guy who I see was probably like a wrestler when he was in high school.
I could see that.
I can see wrestling in him.
Well, and again, as Bump highlighted all of those qualities perfectly, the point of this segment isn't just to say, hey, this is who's available at 16, the best player available at 16 that fits this team. The point is to say, here's a guy that fits this team's culture. Now, we don't know exactly what the culture is going to look like with Mike McDonald at head coach as opposed to Pete Carroll. But we do know the kind of guys that John Schneider likes, that kind of toughness, that ability to stand on your own. Obviously, we know that he wants to have an amazing offensive line and hasn't been able to hit on that quite yet. He's talked about the offensive line and brought it up without being prompted in conversations with Wyman and Bob for the John Schneider show. This is an area of focus for this team and for John Schneider. And this is a guy who's fit the profile personality wise. Football traits that John has previously loved.
Yep. He won't be on the team, though.
He won't be on the team.
Nah, man. You already drafted all with Tim, and you got Nick Harris as well. I mean, we could see him on this team, but there's no need for them to get a center. But you never know.
You never know.
And if he is on this team, we just gave him a nice little profile.
Yesterday, we did a profile on Bo Nix.
We did. You know,
who's not going to be a Seahawk. But you never know.
But you never know.
Coming up, how are you feeling about the Mariners right now? This is what we're going to focus on. The entire debate, as it is every single season with baseball, of course, is whether or not it's too early. Now, a rational, pragmatic approach to baseball, which baseball requires, will tell you that of course it is. Of course it is. It is April 9th. Oh my God, it is early in the season. You're barely into double-digit games. However... Another approach would tell you, hey, as a Mariners fan, I'm not feeling good. I'm not feeling confident. I'm not feeling right. So which camp are you? Are you team, it's too early, everyone needs to calm down, here's where this team can go? Or are you team, yeah, I need to call in and get some things off my chest when it comes to this squad? 866-979-3776. Call now. 866-979-3776. Call now. That's next.